Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. Restore the balance of the universal mind. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee and come on bending knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat. Shabbat Shalom. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I'm your hostess this evening. And the music you were listening to there at the beginning of the show is I Sense Your Presence. It's by Shem Shai. And I just want to extend a welcome to those that are joining us tonight, whether it's your first time listening to the show or whether you're returning and you've listened to the show before. We are now streaming live in three additional places besides Blog Talk Radio, which is TalkStream Live, StreamFinder, and Penn, also known as Pair Encounters Network. And I just want to welcome everybody that's listening in all of those places as well. It's really great to have you here. And also I want to say thank you to tonight's sponsor, which is Earth Goddess Rising. And, we're going to get a little something going here from Earth Goddess Rising. We've got a little message from them, so let me go ahead and get that in for you, and I'll be right back with the rest of the show.
The first Earth Goddess Rising retreat is set for July 11, 12, and 13 of 2014 and will be held in stunning Pagosa Springs, Colorado. Come join us with other men and women from around the world for yoga, meditation, classes, organic meals, dance and music festivities, healing workshops, hot mineral springs, and more. Want more information? Visit earthgoddessrising.com and cash in on the early bird ticket sales, earthgoddessrising.com.
And again, if you're just joining us here, you are listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And my name is Jessie Ann Nichols George. And just to let you know, here on the show, what we do is we look at different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. And some weeks I'm discussing different aspects of compassion, how it is in our life, how it affects our life, the different areas of compassion. Some weeks I've got people that are doing exercises and practical implementations on the show. And then sometimes I've got guests. Well, actually, most of the time I've got guests on the show, actually. And, they bring their different work in. It gives me a chance to show you how other people's work complements and works with compassion. And then also sometimes I'm bringing in different musical artists. Last year we had Stephen Halpern, Peter Cater, Jill Mattson, just to name a few. And I've got a few more lined up coming up this year that are going to be really good as well. So I'm going to keep you posted as I get some more dates settled in on those. Now, in my own work, what I do is I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday lives. I've created the Genesis Clearing Statement, and if you've missed it, you can catch it in our archives. I've authored 4 books, the most recent being You, Me, Life Dreams, and its companion workbook, and then, of course, the first 2, Activating Compassion and its companion workbook. In addition, I've created the Compassion Tour, which is a multi-state nationwide tour, including workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. And you can actually follow all those events that are registered or available to register for, I should say, at jessieannicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. So for those that can't see that at the bottom of the show description, that's jessieannicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And just a reminder, if you enjoy the show this evening, make sure that you tell all of your friends, family, significant others. You know, it's great to share the show because I'm always finding when I share the show, there's somebody out there in my network that goes, oh my God, I just needed to hear that. I was just talking with somebody about that and how perfect it is there's a show right now. So you never know whose life you're going to impact by simply clicking that share button. And, it's a great thing. All the shows are archived. They're available immediately after the show is over, and they can be found as podcasts as well through iTunes and TuneIn.com. And also I create a YouTube version of it, so that's usually up within 24 hours after the end of the show as well. So whatever your preference is for watching, listening, things like that, you will have it there. Now, before we get started, one of the things I like to do is delve into the 72 Names of God, Technology for the Soul. This is by Yehuda Berg, who is a Kabbalah master. And I love Yehuda's work because what he does is he takes those big concepts, kind of like I do in my work, and he brings them into everyday language. So it kind of brings it down to our more normal everyday life. And so there's always something interesting that he has for a message. And by the way, this message goes up on my page of the Main Street Universe tab on my website, which is jessieannnicholsgeorge1.com. And you'll just go to the Main Street Universe tab, find my name, and this usually gets put up within an hour after the show. And the message Yehuda has tonight is, the ancient masters describe this name as a powerful, invincible weapon of war. It assures victory in the longest and most important battle in human history, the conflict against our own evil eye and that of other people. And the common name on this name of God tonight is protection from the evil eye, or I should say looks can kill protection from the evil eye. And the way this name is pronounced is Aleph Lamed Daled. That's Aleph Lamed Daled. And this is really interesting because I think especially where we've had some very challenging times recently, a lot of people, they stop and they look at it and they go, who's putting a curse on me? Who's giving me the evil eye? And, you know, it's not always that so much, but sometimes we fall into that feeling, and that's when we can call on these names here. Now, the insight Yehuda gives on this is, a person possessing an evil eye carries with him the eye of the destroying negative force. Hence, it is called destroyer of the world, and people should be on their guard against them and not come near them so that they should not be injured by them. And that's listed as Zohar is the reference on that. Eyes possess tremendous powers. Now, isn't this interesting? Because our guest tonight is going to talk about iridology. And here we have this direct reference of the evil eye, right? Eyes possess tremendous powers. The human eye has the capability to transmit both positive and negative energy. The evil eye refers to the negative glances and resentful looks that we receive from people harboring destructive feelings towards us. Kabbalists attribute much of the everyday misfortunes to the evil eye. By the same token, when we cast the evil eye towards others, we create a greater opening within ourselves, attracting even more negative glances and their accompanying harmful effects. We become more vulnerable as our spiritual defenses are weakened. Thus, the evil eye brings equal harm to both the bearer and the recipient. The meditation that he gives with this is, your own desire to cast the evil eye at others is diminished. A shield of positive energy surrounds you, offering protection from the negative glances, looks of envy, and mean-spirited intentions of others. And again, the common name is Looks Can Kill, Protection from the Evil Eye, and the name pronunciation is Aleph Lamed Daled. So great message, really fitting. I don't know how it always works that way, but it does. They always fit into what my guest is going to do somehow. So it'll be interesting to see what Craig has to say when we bring him on here in a little bit. Now, a little insight before we go on break and bring Craig on. And this is just a little something to think about to get us into the topic for tonight. When was the last time you really gazed into someone's eyes? Do you find eyes entrancing or intimidating? Are there deeper messages within the eyes? We often find ourselves gazing into someone's eyes when we meet them and begin to fall in love. Some say the soul is in the eyes. They are windows to the soul. We often have learned aspects of being able to tell when people are lying or being honest with us based on what they are doing with their eyes. However, perhaps the eyes are even more encompassing than what we have known on a spiritual level. Iridology has opened even greater doors for us to learn about our physical self. This science of reading the eyes can tell us things such as where our organs are stressed, where disease is originating, physical injury or trauma, parasites, syndromes, and even emotionally related disease. The last then, even though physical, also gives us insight into the emotional and intellectual aspects of what we are dealing with. My mind really ticks away when this starts to connect the dots. Eastern health thoughts are focused around the chi and acknowledge how the organs are also related to different thought and emotional patterns. We know that thoughts and emotions are what have a strong impact on where we are on a spiritual basis. The cycle continuously goes on in the interrelationship. Craig Lane is a person that has combined the art of iridology and sclerology, which is reading the lines in the eyes, and his background in nutrition and knowledge of bioengineered nanoparticles. How does this make a difference? This is much the way that old doctors, you know, we think of the old doctors in time before all the heavy-duty technology worked, and they looked at skin and hair and nails and tongue and eyes, and all the answers they needed were right there. The body is able to tell us all we need. While some of our aches and pains can be misleading, Craig can then take what he learns in the eyes and know more precisely what will work for someone. This would be why one system isn't right for everyone. This is important because with all the technology and the fancy equipment and the tests that are run these days, it is the body itself that has all the answers. The phrase, "The eyes don't lie," applies to body, mind, and spirit. I don't knock all the wonderful new insights we've obtained from technology, but I also believe that many of the basics still hold the best knowledge and insights for us. When was the last time you really looked at your eyes or someone else's? Could your eyes hold the missing information you've been looking for? Are you ready to look at what is happening with you and not just what everyone else tells you to try? This week, our guest focuses on a component of compassion that's related to the aspect of my books of blind, deaf, and defensive. This is a reminder to be open to learn from all aspects and areas of life, to be willing to receive information about ourselves and to use it to propel ourselves into conscious living. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I will have Craig Lane. He's going to be sharing with us his work in iridology, sclerology, and bioengineered nanoparticles. The song that I've got for you during the break tonight is called A Walk in Epping Forest. It's by Claire Hedin. And if you'd like to check out more of her work, I actually did an interview on Claire back at the end of 2012. You can catch that in the archives. And then her website is www.clairehedin.com. That's clarehedin.com, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
A walk through Epping Forest. Of the other, walking on the pathway, covered in leaves, different colors, different stages of decay, of brittleness, subtlety, suppleness, fern and bracken, interwoven, different vegetations, talking to each other, nestling amongst each other, intertwining amongst each other. And as I look up to the forest of the trees above, the tall, tall trunks reaching to the sky. sun, to the rain. Everything has its place. The sunlight is dappled across the leaves, across the ground, across my face, my hair. And as I walk, I feel the forest wrapping itself around me and at the same time opening itself up for me. And we are one. As I walk, it walks with me. As I move, it moves. One expressing the other, connected. And then comes a breeze. The leaves rustle. They bend. Constantly shimmering in the sunlight. The creatures, the little animals, the little insects, everything. So populated. So busy, so silent, so loud. Movement, movement. So graceful, this movement is so graceful. This earth is so beautiful. It's so alive. Constantly dying, regenerating, constant motion, cycles of being. And I'm in that. I'm a part of that. Not from it.
And it seems like I'm having a little technical difficulties tonight here with my sponsor stuff. But welcome back. You are listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. We'll see if we can get this going here in a minute, but maybe not. Anyways, my name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and I'm your hostess this evening. You were just listening to a song by Claire Hedin called A Walk in Epping Forest, and you can certainly learn more about her work at www.clairehedin.com, clarehedin.com. And again, a special thanks to tonight's guest, which is Earth Goddess Rising. And actually, if you missed that show last week, you'll want to catch up with it.
The first Earth Goddess Rising retreat is set for July 11, 12, and 13 of 2014. Embrace your divine feminine and balance the masculine. Nourish your body, mind, and spirit with a 3-day program intended to inspire, clear, and heal your being. You don't want to miss out on the great early ticket sales. Need more information? Explore earthgoddessrising.com. Cash in on the early bird ticket sales today. earthgoddessrising.com.
And as I was mentioning, they were on our show last week. We actually got to spend some time with three of the people that are presenting at the Earth Goddess Rising gathering. So you might want to check that out in the archives. And I just, want to go ahead and move on to my guest tonight, since it's just been one of those interesting nights on my technical board. But I'd like to bring on Craig Lane. And Craig is a CMT, a certified massage therapist, founder of Health Alchemy. He's a certified nutritionist and planetary herbalist. He has an exhaustive and ongoing education in nutrition and healing, including a Bachelor of Science in Nutrition from Cal Polytechnic Institute. And Craig completed the Kushi Institute of Macrobiotics Program of Study and has done extensive training, the world's major herbal and health traditions. He's worked with Western medicine, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda. Boy, my tongue is twisting tonight like crazy. He has a BS in nutrition, Bachelor of Science in Nutrition, and is the author of Moving into Balance. Craig is also a shiatsu massage and acupressure therapist and a whole foods therapeutic chef with expertise in alchemy and pre-digestion of foods. And he walks his talk by maintaining a daily yoga and meditation practice. And we're looking tonight at Craig's work in a variety of areas, but we're going to delve into some even newer things that he's doing, which is iridology, sclerology, and bioengineered nanoparticles. So this is going to get very interesting. I think it's a good thing I'm bringing him on since my tongue is twisting up. And by the way, you can learn more about Craig's work at www.healthalchemy.com. And by the way, that's HEALTHALKEMY.com. So a little bit different spelling in there. Craig, welcome to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Thank you, Jesse. Pleasure to be here.
It's absolutely great to have you here, giving us your time tonight. And I apologize about my tongue twisting, so it's really great you're coming on, and now you can talk for a while in here. I would love to start off with having you share a little about yourself. You know, share with us who Craig is, what was your journey to get into this work that you're doing now?
Well, you're open up. I'm a great at digressing and great with storytelling and oration. It's just the tangents. I'll count on you to keep me within the reins of a boundary of some sort, and go off too far.
I love going out of the boundaries here.
So more recently, I've been bumping up against some things. I've always been one of the things I think that I just saw something recently on Facebook. It was quite enlightening, a statement. It's one thing to find one's mission, and then it's another one to, or one's gift or talent, and then it's another thing to carry it out. And what do we stand for? And I liked that you had something on your website or something that one of the links you had sent me from the newsletter, I think. You know, what do I stand for has been coming up for me lately because even as a child, you know, questioning why am I here, been reflecting on that a lot lately. Just the things that used to fascinate me as a kid never stopped fascinating me, such as, you know, that mountain over there kind of looks not like a mountain. Like, it looks like an ancient temple. I wonder if that is an old temple buried under there. And feeling empathy for other people and understanding what it was I was feeling. And so growing up, I ended up, I think like a lot of people, I ended up feeling like I got a little programmed and just some positive ways. And my mother really had a heart that cared, and she sort of sheltered me, and then in my teenagers, I started to see what the world was really all about, and I got pretty angry because it didn't meet my ideals, my idealized version. And part of that anger, I ended up breaking my neck in a car accident when I was 21 years old. And a lot of people would say, what a tragedy. And I heard it a million, zillion times about how tragic, blah, blah, blah. But it steered my course in a way that I'm pleased it happened now, because I was pretty out of balance. And being a practitioner now for 20 years, I see that sometimes you have to have a breaking point to make cause change. And that's one of those mysteries of life, like what caused that change, you know. And ever since then, that's been my exploration since age 21. So I started to ask, if I broke my neck, I started to ask, like, wow, I didn't eat well. I was a kind of a young, angry punk rock surfer boy. And I think one of the bigger changing moments was the broken neck. And then after I had gotten out of the hospital and I'd been in recovery, I went back to college to finish my degree. And there was a teacher teaching yoga. And I was sitting in this class, and it was like the first time I actually felt hope, I think. I had anger. I'm sitting in the hospital bed and hearing all their disclaimers, and I understood for the first time what healing was all about, too, amidst that anger. And being in that yoga class, I kind of saw someone who was on the other side of their journey. Just the tone of her voice and her overall, quote-unquote, energy, even though I didn't know what it was I was feeling, was very pleasant to be around. And I started doing yoga, and that led to much greater progress. You know, some of the things about Western medicine I discovered was Western medicine has a great place. Like, there are some great things to take out of allopathy and heroic measures and all that. And then what's been lost is what I found is 27 years ago. What you were saying earlier, the body's going to do its own healing, and it just has to remove the obstacles from that to happen and feed it what it needs, just because I'll have some of myself in the conversation later about that. But I knew I needed to change my diet inherently. I knew that I wasn't going to repair a broken neck and a damaged body with Twinkies and coffee, you know. So there was an inherent knowing there.
You can't heal with Twinkies and coffee? Come on. After all those Twinkies, ever.
It's really interesting. I always questioned how I felt, because I had a lot of anger issues and irritability and blood sugar issues and really bad allergies and hay fever. And I had this sinking suspicion it was due to my diet, but I hadn't, I had no way to prove that until I started investigating for myself. So that's what happened, is I started doing yoga and started feeling better, and then I had finished up my bachelor's degree in the time it was actually in business. And they went off and did a few of my adventures after I'd broken my neck. And the one thing I was, probably one of the accomplishments of my life, though, was the doctor saying, you'll never surf again, you'll never do this. And I had been surfing at the time for 6 years since I was 15. And then you tell a 21-year-old young man that he can't surf and, you're going to get a lot of resistance. So in 3 months' time, I was back in the water despite a lot of objections. And that was just by the sheer force of spirit. The way I see it now, and that was part of my healing, though. And then that first year was really a battle to get my neck and my nervous system and my spine back in shape, trying to surf and be in the water again. But just one of those lessons of mine was responsible for my own healing. And so back to that Western medicine thing. So they provided the emergency measures to save my life, and then I was responsible for the care and the healing that would occur after that. And so slowly I just started to develop. I got my bachelor's degree, and I ended up been in the corporate world for a while, and had started having some strange shamanic dreams, and it started another path is what led me back to my nutrition degree, and that's a longer story. I won't go into it now, but then I ended up going back to school and getting a second bachelor's degree in nutrition, and it was very unsatisfying towards the end when I got to my senior level classes, however, to see that the things that I thought I would be learning, like, well, I want to give somebody, like, something to cure their hepatitis, or something to help their sinus congestion, and I wasn't being taught that. I was being taught, oh, they'll be taking these drugs and these medications, and these are the foods you don't want them to take, and I wasn't getting enough of the juice I was really there for, I felt. So I got a little disillusioned, and then that's when I turned to Chinese medicine, and particularly macrobiotics, because I had two friends in one of my senior-level nutrition classes, and we were all really fond of the macrobiotic Chinese medical way of seeing things, which was more symbolic and metaphorical, and the heating and the cooling aspect and the moistening and the drying, that was super appealing to me, because I started to finally realize I had some tools to help me understand the body and on a lot of levels, emotionally, spiritually, physically. Starting to apply some principles, and then my question is, well, how can I practically look at that? And that's going to fast forward later in our conversation about what I'm doing currently. But assessment has always been a big thing with me, and so that was one of my things I started to see in Chinese medicine was like, well, I can actually find a way to assess the body. Like, anybody can look at their tongue, and it's a simple teaching tool for self-assessment. I look at my tongue every day, and it tells me how I'm doing. And it's like, geez, getting a little purple, that means this, I need to do this. It's cheap and doesn't cost anything, and that's what the medical people, I shouldn't say that, but people at the top of the food chain don't want us knowing that. qualified statements. So I started to see that, I'm starting to feel better, and then I started to want to see health from different angles. So then I got my bachelor's degree in nutrition, and I started to say, I want to see health from the herbal medicine angle, because I started having some experiences with plants that were confirming some early experiences in life of how I felt about plants and them having intelligence and perception. And then so I got certified in herbal medicine. That led to my shiatsu master teacher of macrobiotics back east, he wanted me to get certified in body work. So that's another angle to see health, and treatment and assessment. So got some certification out here in body work and loved my thousands and thousands of hours there working full-time and just learned so much about the body over probably a 6 to 10 year period working on 10 to 20 people a week. That was super beneficial. And then finally I started, when I was in that practice, I've had a small nutrition practice running for 20 years, and I started to see people coming in from a local physician, and they were super happy with him, and so I finally realized here's an opportunity to get some referrals going and learn more about the world of medicine, and as I jumped into that more and more, I started to see, like, at the time I had seen some study on the internet that by the ANA's own admission, there was a 40% rate of misdiagnosis occurring.
40%
last year. 40% level of this diagnosis. And I can't, not being a good reporter, I can't cite the reference, unfortunately. So it will have to just go on the record as...
That seems like a pretty high percent to me, 40% misdiagnosis. I mean, that's almost 50% of the time. I mean, that's almost
half
the time.
That's how I took it in. I was pretty disappointed. That's my point. Because I started seeing people coming into my office all the time and getting body work and complaining about how poorly they were doing and how they, you know, they weren't getting any time with their doctor and they're just being sent away with a medication and they weren't even so. It's another part of our conversation I think we could have later. But whether that number is true or not, it was too high. And I don't, since my memory is a little off on it, I just say it was higher than I wanted it to be. So I started to want to work on more assessment and have a practice based on having people be able to get a health checkup and have some reliable, cheap ways without spending $3,000 to get, you know, lab work that tells them their DNA is faulty and their liver methyl pathways, you know, and it's just, it's failing us because of what you said earlier. Is the old barefoot doctor techniques are still valid, but so is some of the information. The technology is also valid. We just have forgotten that the first do no harm premise, and we've also forgotten the old premise that I admired as a child was, let's wait this out. Let's wait this out a few days or a few weeks. I remember so many doctors I admired just saying, it'll be okay a few days, just leave it alone. You know, now we over-treat and, like, every little symptom for the kids, you know. Oh, my God! You know, and that's kind of what it's led me to. It's like, let's just chill out here. It's not as bad as you think. And, you know, my mom, bless her heart, just was a little bit overreactive and worried, you know. And it's like, that's one of the things I was working with in recently, too, is what is the energy of this? How does that feel in my being, you know? What is worry? It's a drain, you know? It's not accomplishing anything. It's just an eddy of energy that goes to a black hole, basically. So being able to identify those things in myself has been, and helping others identify those, you mentioned the eye, you know, and oh, my God, what a rich, vast area that opened up when I started studying Bernard Jensen, who, studying his nutrition work the last 15, 20 years, I had seen the books on iridology, but I'd always been like, oh, it's just too much. I'm still finishing up. So there was a point in my Chinese medical studies about 15 years in where I had this teacher I really admired, and he was an American of all things, though I had a number of different nationalities of Oriental medical teachers. And he said, you know, you're going to learn all this mumbo-jumbo and all these numbers, and you'll have to memorize all these systems. And but he says 10 or 15 years down the road, it'll all just become intuitive, and you'll be able to access stuff really easily. And I was like, oh, my God, 10 or 15 years, you're kidding me. But I paid my dues, and now I'm 20 years into it, and it's like people just marvel at the speed with which I have a brain like a computer on certain things, and just access is so quick. And so it's how I'm, you know, what's my gift and my talent? Well, obviously I have a gift for finding information and digging up what I call vectors of, like, there could be a vector pointing at the heart, another vector pointing at the heart. Like, and so that's one thing I'm really excited about, is being able to look at somebody and say, well, your eyes are telling me this, your tongue's telling me this, your vocal inflections are telling me this, your intake forms are telling me this. And then if I see, well, one of my Chinese medical doctors likes to teach in the traditional way, is if you see three things pointing in a certain direction, you know it's a good place to investigate, you know, and look at, maybe treat. But to be careful with the way we use those words in, you know, public radio show. It's like, oh, I filled the word treat, now you can sue me or put me in jail. But be careful with my language, you know. So I guess one of the main things that I think I'll just end with, and you can start to steer it a little bit more, is starting to discover, like, the primary roots of you seem to be a really deep person is, like, what's driving my behavior, what's driving my anger? Why is this person sitting across from me? Why do they have cancer? And because I tell everyone in my referral network, send me your most difficult cases. I don't know why I'm attracted to them. I love the case that no one else can solve. That's just part of my Sherlock Holmes, you know, detective work is what one physician in San Diego calls himself, the health detective. And that was like, oh, my God, that's a fantastic word. A health detective. Marvelous, you know. So I think it's just, and it flows down to passion. And a lot of people that come in, they're beating themselves up for the very thing that is their strength. For example, I tell women that worry about their partner or their kids too much, I say, well, you have worry, right? And I go, but how do you feel in your heart? How do you feel in your chest? And she goes, well, I worry because I care. And I go, exactly. So the root, if you take it back to a root, which is the turnaround, is you worry because you care. Doesn't that feel better than to worry? You know, so these root level explorations are what I'm sort of interested in too, because it all boils down to energy in the end. And if people have dysfunctional behaviors, which drive dysfunctional decisions, which drives dysfunctional physiology, then I had some great fortune, a great set of teachers that you could always ask a deeper question. What's the root of that? Well, what's the root of that? You know, and you keep taking it back a layer. And that's mm-hmm. what I kind of liked about what I saw about your website, was this layer of causation comes back to like a certain level of immediacy. And I want to see how immediate people can be. So I will test them. I've been really interested in walking an edge. And that's another part of my passion is like where can we thrive, and we're not thriving, and what's in the way, and you know, that's a whole level of conversation that can take 2 hours just to talk about all the context.
And you bring up a good aspect, things that really affect our health, which is you said, you know, I worry because I love, is something that when your patients came from, and there's a whole realm of directions we could go on that. But I find that, you know, there's actually a contradiction there in a sense that if the love is totally taking over, there's maybe not the worry, but these things do cascade over, because whether the worry is coming from that love or whether it's coming from anxiety and fear and things like that, it's going to have this reaction on the body. Now, you were talking about somebody saying, oh, you're kind of like a health detective. You refer to yourself actually as a health alchemist, which I love that term.
Well, alchemy was, I had a teacher that I just loved. He's a great clinician, and he has an acronym called KIS, and it means keep it simple. So the way I remember herbs and things and supplements and nutrients is kind of like, okay, let's keep it as simple as possible. So that's what I try and do. You know, when we bring something in, it's like, okay, how can I translate this in as simple as terms as possible? Because you know how it is. For the most part, we have a pretty short attention span these days, and so you got to get through to people pretty quick. And there has to be simple, quick analogies that someone can understand, you know, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do.
I love part of things, because I focus a lot on that too. There's enough big, wordy, technical things out there. And what most people need is like, okay, my brain's overloaded. Can we just bring it down to something really, really simple? And so I love that you're doing that you're looking at that different factors. Because when I think of alchemist, I think, okay, we're going to combine a variety of different pieces to come up with something.
Yeah, like transformation, right? And that word fascinated me, because I was always interested in food. Even as a kid, I'd help my mom make dinner or whatever. And then my parents divorced, and I was a young teenager. And then by the time I was a mid-teenager, my mom was needing to like get some space for her own life. And so I just started cooking for me and my brother. And lo and behold, I discovered I had a talent. Like, I could put food together, and like, that tastes pretty good. Wow. I didn't even know what I was doing, but it sure tastes good, kind of thing. And over the years, just learning how to cook and refining it and all that, and then I started to see, like, well, food is alchemy. You know, we're transforming it in the pot to something else. And so I got fascinated with that process. And then fermentation, you know, being part of that, and then studying how, oh, gee, we got these weird microbes that live in our body, and oh, gee, there's more thousands of more microbes in our own cells, and it starts to open up these vast mysteries of, you know, what we are ultimately. So yeah, alchemy is part of that, and then I think that an alchemist, there's a great man that you might find fascinating. I didn't really no, like, I had my own version of alchemy, is what I'm saying, so keeping it simple. I was trying to keep the alchemical part simple, but then I ran across a man a couple of years ago through some men's work in the Mankind Project, and this leader had a T-shirt on that said the Alchemist Guild, and I couldn't stop looking at the shirt, and I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God, what if there's a lineage of alchemists that's been around for thousands of years, and I'm unaware of it, and he might be part of it, you know? So I approached him a few weeks later. I emailed him, and I said, hey, are you part of any kind of, you know, secret club, alchemists? And he said, well, as a matter of fact, I'm in a lineage that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. And I'm all, okay, well, let's talk about this. And so I got reminded about an old alchemist named Paracelsus. I can spell that, P-A-R-A-C-E-L-S-U-S, Paracelsus. Yeah, I believe that's how you... And Paracelsus was an alchemist, and they were really interested in something called the Philosopher's Stone, which I've been in a little bit of a study on alchemy since last September when I first really got started on really studying this. And so there is a lineage of alchemy that goes back thousands of years, and I believe that on some level the Essenes, the Gnostics, whoever was living during that time period may have been practicing alchemy in their own way, and that the fantasy novels I used to read as a child about magic and transformation and jewels and crystals and all that, maybe there was actually magic in the world kind of stuff. And then seeing in my practice more and more the quote-unquote miracles happening, and wow. So alchemy, yeah, it's like there's a lot of areas you can go with that, and I believe there are great, great people that have walked the planet, many more than I even realized, you know, and it's just sort of humbling to see, like, the work some people have done and how it's, whatever we call the powers that be now, it's like it's, you know, I used to envision the utopian world that we were all going to create, and then I was reminded many times that this world isn't meant to be a utopia by many teachers and beings, you know, like, you're not going to get that one. But, you know, these dark powers, if you will, they're just part of the duality of our plane. And so that was, I don't know where I was going with that, but I'm going to stop there, I think. It's just better to go with the alchemical part and dark and light.
Yeah, because it really is, as you say, about transformation when we talk about alchemy. And it's in everything. I mean, there isn't anything that's existing that doesn't have alchemical component to it. You know, whether you're talking a tree, whether you're talking the human body, whether you're talking something that we ingest, you know, like you say, it's there are a lot of people that get wrapped up just in the metaphysical term of alchemy, but it expands to so many different areas, and basically it is that blending of, I would say, different components to create a shift or a change in things. So I love that you're using that term, because I love the magical side of things, and I think it's a great term to bring out. Iridology is one of those things you're delving into. Let's talk a little bit about that and share with people, what is this iridology thing all about?
Yeah, thank you. I think that this will be good to publicize some of this. I haven't actually had a chance to really talk about some of the quote-unquote alternative methods of assessment that I practice and that they are out there. It's just that people ask me, can I find someone out there like you? And I go, God, who does iridology and Chinese medicine with this other stuff together? So the first point is iridology is part of my practice. I wouldn't call myself per se an iridologist. I don't know what I would call myself at this point. It's pretty unusual. So I'll start off by qualifying that iridology is a tool of assessment I use as part of a larger tool of assessments. In and of itself, I'll be quite blunt, it gives more limited information, in my opinion. I believe that if you're really skilled at it and it's the one modality you practice, then I believe it can provide you with, if you have the right equipment and the right insights, but I just don't. I'm 8 years into it, and I still feel fairly intermediate to beginner level. Humbly will state that. I have no formal training in iridology, but I do have formal training in sclerology. I'm finishing up a course on. And so the difference is in iridology, what's beautiful about it is, first of all, is the window to the soul thing is I am a big fan of merging science and we'll just call science and the woo-woo. So I want objective evidence for people to see. Like I want them to fill out a questionnaire and see better results before and after a 30-day cleanse, for example. So iridology can and does show long-term improvements, and it does show long-term degeneration. So the upside of iridology is you can – I feel that I have – one of my favorite things to do is do a public presentation and tell people, come on up, let's take a volunteer. I'll photograph your eyes. I'll photograph your tongue. And I'll just – don't tell me anything about you, and I'll try and sum up what I see as your hidden stressors and problems out of balance and where you're strong maybe. And so usually I give them about 90% correct, which is quite a remarkable – so as an assessment tool, just iris, sclera, and tongue are remarkably accurate, I've found for me. So the iris is like kind of what you're born with, like your natal astrology chart. The eye doesn't change that much the overall structure. It's like the scaffolding is laid when you're born, and then some of the pigmentation will change, coloring will change. I believe due to toxicity, due to the anatomy of the eye itself, is very well set up to reflect systemic changes in the body, but I also believe the limitations of the eye, what the iris is giving us is more, it's energetic and tissue information, but like the tongue, I know the tongue is telling me about the digestive system mostly. But there's secondary things I can pick up from the tongue. And I know the pulse is telling me more like chi or energy what it's doing when I do Chinese medical pulses, which I'll humbly say that's also an area where, it's pretty a humbling thing to study because it's thousands and thousands still like, this is pretty amazing. But the eye, so this, the iris, it gives us information, but we always must contextualize that information. To me, it's like, this is what it's showing me, but is it diagnosing? No, it's more saying, here are some patterns of pathology that may have developed and some, like, imbalances, whether, your spine is hardening, and you can see by this obvious set of patterns here in the eye that there's hardening there, and often I'll just ask somebody, like, you got something going on down there? And they'll often, 90% of the time, they'll also say, yeah, there is something going on there. And so I always check and make sure that I have a valid system I'm working with, too, because, the quackery thing is quite up with me. I just, that word. And so I want to make sure what I'm doing is valid and, does work. And then so the sclera, I believe, is a better tool for charting short-term progress. Because, like, I saw my iris go from, I had light blue eyes as a child, and my eyes became hazel as an adult. And when I started studying iridology, I asked myself, maybe that hazel is pigmentations of toxicity, where the blue is turned a greenish color due to the pigments being influenced by the, the level of buildup in my blood and lymph tissue. So I began a journey of cleansing and extreme investigation of this. And the one thing I'm sad about is I didn't take a photograph of my eye 8 years ago when I first started this journey in iridology. All I have is a photograph about 3 years ago, and it's not even that detailed. And I have seen a remarkable change in my iris over the last 8 years from going much, much bluer, and areas what they call open lacuna, which are areas of weakness in the lung area especially, are completely like, they're healed up with what they call a scar tissue pattern, or there's this white tissue that fills in these dark areas. And I could explain that better if I had a big public presentation board or something, but or a webinar, but for our purposes here, it's just an area that filled in, that showed a lack in the eye. And so having seen the things I've seen, I always look for signs, and the signs where this is a great tool, it's just been a bit misunderstood. I used to walk around with a lot of suspicion about healers and things in general, and even despite my own knowledge of what help was, it was just really the radar was up. So Bernard Jensen was kind of my radar was up, and kept studying and trying things out, because I had a great spiritual teacher that said, don't take my word for anything, go find out for yourself. And that's exactly how I've approached health. It's like, I'm not going to take anybody's word for anything. I'm going to find out for myself. And started finding out for myself, okay, this is valid. And sclerology came along, okay, this is valid. And then the sclera is an interesting thing, too, because it can also tell us the type of toxicity we're looking at. And the pigmentation as it appears in the iris can sometimes tell us the type of toxicity and where it needs to be fleshed out. And the other last thing I'll say is that the sclera has helped me determine more than anything else that how much we're carrying around in our bodies that shouldn't be there. I'll put it that way. Accumulated weight, you know, just there's one way of putting it.
You know, that's interesting that focuses very specifically through sclerology or the sclera, as you say. For those that don't know what sclerology or sclera is, can you give us a little definition of that?
Yeah, so iridology, by the way, I don't like the word ologies and isms and all that or dogmas or any of that. So we'll loosely say that iridology is the study of the iris or the colored part of the eye and its structure. And there are various ways to read the map, I'll put it that way. And the iris can be read as a way to, I see prolapse, for example. You can read it in almost any way. You can look at almost any tissue you want in the body. Like I can look at the central nervous system. I can look at the spine. So use it as a map to see a tissue's health, inherent health, genetic health that you were born with, and where you might be going with your health. The iris kind of tells us that. And then the patterns of color or change or patterns of light and dark in the iris tell us certain things, whether we're inflamed or whether we're deficient or degenerating, and where they are determine where there's tissue degeneration or inflammation. So it's like reading a vast map, and the more you know, the more you can read the map and the patterns thereof. And the sclera is, yes, I start with people to make it real simple to for if you want to look at your own whites of your eyes, is a perfect sclera, which you will never see, has no blood vessels in it, and it's purely white. That's an ideal sclera. So we start with that as a starting point. The more blood vessels one has, this is my simple way of saying it, and I will humbly say that there might be many others that are better, but my way of reading the sclera is the more blood vessels there are, the more stress there is in the system. The more, so this couple types of blood vessels means there's more congestion in where it's located. The coloring of the sclera will tell us whether it's bluish or yellowish or greenish or grayish, certain things that are happening in the bloodstream and the tissue. And then finally, where the blood vessels are on that map, which is somewhat similar to the iris, is a very well-established map, tell us where the congestion or the hardening or the stress might be. So it's not a system of diagnosis per se, but it's a system of determining, well, gee, you were diagnosed with, say, MS, but actually the root of your MS is in the nerves in your colon, which somebody might not suspect. Or it might be due to a prolapsed colon where the prolapse has been so bad that it's damaged the nerves in that part of the body, you know, and that caused an autoimmune response that you didn't even know about 20 years ago. And so you go a lot of different ways. And then when we say we read the tongue, then we're looking at also how big is the tongue? What color is it? Is there a coating on it? What does each side look like compared to the center or the back or the front? So we look at relativities a lot in my world and practice. So that's where health becomes an art and a science, I guess.
And I want to clarify just a little bit that when we're talking about the sclera, we're talking about the whites of the eyes, and a lot of people will recognize it as if they get strain on the eyes, they'll see the blood vessels come up in the whites of the eyes. And I had somebody in chat that was asking about it, so I wanted to clarify that, and that's S-C-L-E-R-A on that for those who want to look. And again, Craig was mentioning, I'm addressing something in the chat room here, that a very healthy sclera would have no blood vessels. Is that correct? It would be very white, no blood vessels?
You can quote me on that, and if you want more information, there's a guy that I really like, Dr. Jack Tips, T-I-P-S, Dr. Jack Tips, he's down in Texas. I have his sclerology study course, and he is the advanced master teacher, so I would defer to him on what he would say, but that's the way I've learned it. And so I will qualify it with that I'm not the level of expertise that this guy is at, and I would defer to what he would say there as the perfect sclera. But As far as my experience over the last 5-6 years with it, yeah, that's what I've observed. And then So it's an easy thing to see when we look, like after we drink, for example, you know, our whites of our eyes get bloodshot. And that's an interesting thing because alcohol affects the liver, which when you see that many blood vessels in the eye, it's often because the pH has shifted in the tissues where it's either too alkaline or too acidic in a tiny little change, because tiny changes affect the tissues profoundly. So those blood vessels are there because there's overall tissue stress from the level, the poison in the alcohol, the body's saying, get it out. So the pH is being affected. And the liver's under stress. And it's funny because they're gone, right? Usually within 24 hours, all those blood vessels are gone. And that's what's beautiful about, if you photograph the process, it's quite beautiful to see the time lapse of like, oh, look at that, it's gone now.
Well, it is kind of fun to look at these things. You know, when we talk about it and people say, well, how do I diagnose this? You know, how do I, use some of these tools? And I actually had somebody saying, how do you diagnose disease with your method? And I think you mentioned that too, that it's kind of like looking at a map. When you look at the eye, it's kind of like looking at a map, and each line will represent maybe a different part of the body or an organ or something, and the way it's running, whether the line is vertical or horizontal or whatever, might indicate also whether it's congestion or whether it's something else in there. We look at it, and so many times we hear that phrase, it's right in front of your eyes. And in this case, that's really quite literal. You can look at your eyes and say, oh, I've got a whole bunch of blood vessels or a whole bunch of strain on my eye right now, and I need to clear my system. That's like, I know I spend a lot of time, for example, on the computer, way more than I need to, well, should be, let's put it that way. I can tell some days that strain comes up, and I know that if I shift and go a little more pure in my diet, if I get out the dandelion tea or, the kefir or something else, my eyes will hold up better or it will clear.
Well, I love being able to talk about this. I don't get this much opportunity. I mean, I have a captive audience in my practice, of course. People are absolutely fascinated with the ability. And what's also great about this form of practice is you can photograph the iris, the sclera, and the tongue quite easily. And Jack Tipps even has a system called foot glyphology where he'll examine the bottoms of your feet and the way the lines are. It's not reflexology. It's called glyphology, and it's the way the lines of the foot look. And he believes that if you put the sclera and the feet together, it's an 80 to 90% accurate assessment of the body's tissue. So I haven't gotten into the glyphology yet, but it's part of my package from him. And I'm fascinated about that, too, adding another accurate way to, like, show people their own progress with photographs. You know, like, I have time sequences of all my clients. Like, here you were 4 years ago. Look at you last year. Look at these lines here. They're gone now. And look at this over here. But now there's this new one over here, you know, and that means this is happening. And so it's a good guidance system, I believe, and I was fascinated by muscle testing, for example, always just absolutely fascinated with it. But the problem with these, like, bioimpedance machines and muscle testing and all that is that, for me, I'm just a skeptic. If I go to see four different muscle testers, they're going to give me four different responses in 20 minutes. And I tell people, at their best, they're telling you where your body's at in that moment, and unfortunately, it can change in 5 minutes. So
thank you for that.
I believe in it.
People forget that all the time. And the muscle testing, I think, sometimes can be highly influenced by our emotional state in the moment.
Yeah, that's what I really want. I don't want to put it out there because I'm in a steady group of people that there's a lot of muscle testers in the group, and there's a lot of freaking, I'd just say, amazing muscle testers. And I think it's like any other modality. A good muscle tester, he has no bias whatsoever, and he's very skilled. He or she's very skilled at reading that point. Because I do muscle test, but I do it blind, or I don't know. I just use it for product. Like, I got four products to choose from. Let's blind muscle test you, see what your body tells us. Then we don't know, and the client doesn't know, and we're muscle testing just for strength. And pendulums work well for that too. But once you get our minds involved, you know, it's just it's too hard to overcome bias by the one running the study, so to speak. like doing the experiment. And so, I just don't want to discredit muscle testing either, because I've been accused in the past of discrediting it, and I believe it does work. It's just that it's hard to prove your validity to a person like me. That's what my point was.
I agree. I don't want to discount it, because I have worked with some people who are very, very good in it. But I do know that it can shift. You know, unlike the eyes, which are responding directly to what's happening in the body, I do know that there can be an emotional factor in muscle testing, because, when we're feeling highly emotional, our body is not going to process, digest, and so on. So when you muscle test, sometimes that is going to come up. But, and then if you're in a really good mood, your body's going to digest very well compared to a bad mood. So I do know there's some variance, and like you say, there are some very, very good people out there that are doing the work, and they're very accurate in what they're finding, and I think it works very well, particularly if we're looking at some of the bigger issues. And like you say, when you combine it with other things and you can cross-reference it with, say, iridology or sclerology or looking at the tongue or some of these other things, then you can really pinpoint it in a little more.
Absolutely, and it's another tool, and we want to be able to, we want to be able to have this complicated technology, lab work, all that, and then iridology and these tools, they give us ways of seeing, like I like to use hair mineral analysis, for example, because it's a good, it's a cheap, inexpensive, out-of-pocket way to see what's going on with our body and our tissues and our cells. So, that's what I'm always looking for in today's world, is like, what's good monetary leverage here, I had a client today at MS, for example, he was saying, well, my doctor wants me to do this $400 candida test, and we already know, he's like, how do I know that what I'm doing with my candida is working, And I'm like, well, that's the problem, my friend, is the tests come back false positives, false negatives. And so what we end up doing is I have some really simple ways of checking, and some of them are just basically symptoms. And so I said, is $400 a good use of your money right now to spend for this test when you're already hurting financially and you're spending money on supplements and practitioners? I said, it appears to me that it's an extra stress, and the information you're going to get out of it, your reward is going to be very minimal versus, the other ways to leverage that money, is my point. So that's one thing that I like to do in my practice, is point that out to people, this big picture stuff, which, Jesse, I have to say it now because it's a disclaimer about this bioengineered nanoparticles. I do want to talk to you about it, but I want to talk to you. I'm not an expert in it. What I was saying, the point I was trying to make to you was there are things that, the big picture things that I think are really important when a person walks in my office, and as healing is multifaceted. But if we aren't given at least the information of the big picture, the soup we find ourselves being stirred in, our environment, then we're not going to make very good progress. And what's happening these days is there's more and more evidence coming out. It's fairly irrefutable now that something's been going on for anywhere from 20 to 50 years of some kind of climate control, geoengineering, whatever you want to call it. I hate calling it chemtrails because it's not scientific, but people are doing soil and water samples, and they're flying up near these things now. There's just basically irrefutable evidence that there are aluminum, strontium, and barium particles in the atmosphere in a nanized form, or oxide form, I believe they're called. And these tiny particles are, who knows? I'm still not clear. I see lots of different stories that, weather manipulation to weather warfare to, they're trying to kill us all to, they're trying to save us all, it's like, I don't know, but like any good scientist, I see here's the data, and then here's my interpretation of the data. I'll be happy to, explore my interpretation of the data with you, because I'll go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole with the best of them, but I'll always kind of keep my head and my shoulders about it, because it's just not a good place to take ourselves, unless we can do something about it. And so back to the big picture thing was that if aluminum, Dr. Russell Blaylock, who wrote the book Excitotoxins, he's sort of an expert in neurology, and he has a whole YouTube about this, about the nanites particles and the chemtrails, and this, him being a neurologist, is expert. You know, these nanites aluminum is getting into the brain, and it's really causing a lot of autoimmune problems, more than we realize, and a lot of excitotoxins, so a lot of excitability of the nervous system, because aluminum, that's what it does. And so it's these big picture things, and that's what I wanted to say. I wouldn't consider myself an expert in it, but I'd say that I'm aware of a bigger picture thing that a lot of people are willing to acknowledge, I think, and that's part of my niche, is like, hey, what are we doing about it then? You know, like, we could say whine and complain, the kingdom come, but if we can't do something about it, then why spread the information? And so I figured now there's something we can do about it, and that's, my brother's really into zeolite, and sure, that's one way to go. And I find, we have to find a way to deactivate this stuff, because it's flowing in and out of our body. So my last part of my rant will be, there was an old tenet in health that part of the Keep It Simple system, and that's, there's only one cause of disease, was what one old Greek physician might have said. It might have been Hippocrates. There's only one cause of disease, congestion. There's only one cure, circulation. And I say that, I mean, if there's toxins in our environment and we can't avoid them, and each and every one of us, by one study, has 20,000 chemicals in our body that shouldn't be there, then we want those things being taken in and excreted as fast as possible. We want them coming in and getting out. We don't want them sticking places. Like, we don't want, you know, radioactive iodine in our body, because it's going to cause problems. But if it comes in and out quickly, then it's going to cause us issue. So some of the things that I'm looking at is, you know, making sure we're getting good drainage. Are our bowels moving? If not, you know, then we need some colon therapy. Are we getting something to chelate this? Are we getting, you know, are we not eating too many excitotoxins on the side, you know, like sugar or other stimulants? So there's a lot of ways that one can look at that. And that's my long-winded disclaimer about bioengineered nanoparticles. How's that?
And it's one of those things where, of course, we want to try to eat as purely as possible because it's easier on the body. It doesn't have so much that it's got to process out of it. You know, that's one of those areas that is just a big one with me, because every time I see those chemtrails out there, I'm just like, oh, you know, the chemicals that are coming down on the food that you can't control and things like that. And but you make a really good point, and this is what I love about your work, Craig, is that you wrap it back around to the average everyday Joe person, Jane person, and you bring it in to say, is this test really worth it to do? Or it comes down to these basic fundamentals of, we're not going to be able to 100% alleviate this out of our food, even if we're eating organic, toxic-free, blah, 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 blah. Even if we're growing it ourselves and we know everything that's going on it, it's still coming down to a certain extent from the sky because of what they're spraying out there. Bottom line is, so what do we do about that? We move. Like you say, you get it to move through your system. And congestion, boy, you nailed it there, because I look around at most things that people deal with and something is congested in the body in some way. You know, whether it's sinuses, whether it's energetically in the chakra system, whether it is breathing issues, whether it is digestive, whatever it is, it's something functioning on that sluggish level.
Yeah, that's well put. I've been dealing with a system in Chinese medicine through macrobiotics. They talk about the three stages of degeneration, and then there's another guy that has a system called the toxic stress cycle, Dr. Jack Tipps does, and so congestion is actually the third stage of a degenerative process. Tissue irritation is actually first, and inflammation. Congestion appears as a result of inflammation and, in my opinion, malnutrition, which most of us are. We're just not getting what our cells need, and that's a long story. But we aren't eating fresh foods anymore. That's the main thing is we don't eat fresh ground flour, so therefore the bread products we eat, you know, I could go on a litany right now, and I probably shouldn't yet, but, you know, people come into my office, every single person, and I live in the Bay Area, Santa Cruz, California, you know, mecca of healers and health, and, I mean, I just had the most wonderful dinner tonight, and just so grateful for the climate here. Even with the, planned drought they're doing to us, is, oh, I lost my tangent.
We're not getting enough of the whole foods in our body.
Yes, we're not eating fresh. We're not eating fresh anymore. So we're talking about energy again, and this one essential oil therapist wrote this book. It's a very, very long, extensive book, and it's basically transcending science, bringing science and the woo-woo together. And so here's a great way of saying that when we use pure essential oils, for example, or we could translate it to pure food, pure fresh food, it has a certain frequency or song it sings. And our cells on the receiving end are also singing a song, and they're looking to come together in a way that achieves some kind of harmonic resonance. And as soon as you pick a food, like a green bean or a carrot or a vegetable, it begins to, you know, degenerate, and its song begins to obviously get slower and more distorted. And then the cell doesn't recognize it as easy, and actually the cell has to work harder to get that nutrition in and the waste out. And so what I'm trying to say is most people, the standards of health have somehow been extremely liquefied over the last 100 years. I look back on Dr. Royal Lee and Weston Price and Bernard Jensen and some of these old health professionals and healers, and they were pointing things out 80 to 100 years ago that, hey, there's some stuff going on with the food processors that it's pretty rotten what they're doing. We better be careful. And they were all silenced or, you know, discredited. And now we have these standards that they're just – I tell people, like, so everybody walks in my office and says they eat healthy. Then why are you in my office? You know, like, you've got stage 4 cancer and you say you eat healthy. Well, something's not right with that statement, right? So I tell people,
right,
your standards are just too low. You're not asking the right questions. You're not putting your leverage in the right place. And you've been educated into a system of brainwashing and, you know, control so that you'll be controlled. And now, are you willing to wake up out of it? Are you willing to eat the red pill? You know, the whole matrix thing. Are you willing to eat the red pill? Because if you're not, I'm not interested in people that aren't awake in my practice. If you're not going to want to step into your life and participate, then you won't work well with me because I'm just too demanding. I'm interested in awake people.
Thank you for that. Yes, because you know what is so interesting there is that somebody will go out and take some pill that is basic, like taking a toxic cocktail, you know, like just pour your bug repellent in because it's pretty close to what you're getting. And yet they don't want to take something that is just plain food. It's like it's so much cheaper and so much easier to just do the nutrition thing than it is to worry about these pills and what they're reacting with and how they're and the three other pills you've got to take to offset the side effects of that pill. I like that you brought out the point that you work with people who are going to be proactive in this process. And I've actually had that discussion a lot with people lately that, you know what, I can totally accept that you don't want to take care of yourself, you don't want to kill yourself, that you don't want to make this change, but I can't help you. And, you know, if you don't want to help yourself, I can't help you.
Well, it goes back to many years ago, early on in my practice, I was reading a story about, I love reading inspiring stories, you know, about healers and great sages. And so I was reading about this Native American healer, and he lived up in Seattle, and this guy flew up from, I don't know where, somewhere in California. I wrote the story so many years ago. And he was waiting in this hotel room in Seattle for this Native American to arrive. And the Native American was such a master that just walking up the stairs, he knew what the guy needed to hear before he even saw him. I had studied with them. I'm a Japanese master that kind of did the same thing. People would pay $300 just to get just to get to see him, you know, for a few minutes. So this Native American walks up the stairs, opens the door, and before the guy even had a chance to really get settled, the Native American looks at him and says, "I'm sorry, I can't help you. You're not done with your suffering yet." That was it. Then he left. So the moral of the story is I look at people sometimes, and one of my great, great teachers asked me point blank 20 years ago, he said, "What's your dream, and do you think you can be happy?" He says, "Because everything in your life must fall around your dream, and so your health is contingent upon your dream. If you're going to be a boxer, you're going to have a way different set of health parameters than if you're a meditator. And so that's everything must be contextualized again, you know. So someone walks in my office, it's like, okay, there's a big picture we're seeing here. Yes, I spend most of my time educating people out of the maleducation they were taught, back to the health standards. You know, it's like, your standards are about 100 times lower than mine. So let's first of all just acknowledge that. And then, am I going to push you to my standards? No, but I am going to give you projects to get your alchemical processes working again, because back to the iris, what the iris tells me, one of the beautiful things it tells me that I use it for is, how efficient of a digester are you? Do you digest inefficiently, which is what, I'll raise my hand, yes, I do. So if I'm not an impeccable eater and food combiner, I produce a lot of waste. I have inefficient digestion, and I produce waste in my digestive processes of getting energy into my cells, and that waste materializes as allergies or colds or flus or whatever. So a lot of people, they say, "I got a cold," and they're actually incorrect. A lot of colds and flus are nothing more than a cleansing reaction, and so that's from built-up waste. And there's another type of person out there that they're a solid digester. Like they get the food in, they burn it up, and there's no waste at all. It goes right into energy, and that's the ideal person. They can get away with a lot. They can drink whiskey and, you know, eat bad meat and, you know, Cheetos their whole life and still live to be 99. That kind of person. So that's one thing the iris does tell me in the system, and that's kind of the other context there is. We're going on a silly different tangent. I'm trying to make sure I'm keeping all the threads aware of here. I think I'm going to stop there and let you move forward.
Okay. Yeah, so let's look at that for a moment, you know, since we're on the eyes right now. Kind of come full circle back around that, because I agree with you, and I loved how you were bringing out earlier in the show about how the eye color actually shifts depending on how clear our body is and how well it's functioning. And so many things come back to that. I mean, it's just like a machine. If it doesn't function well, it can only produce so much or do so much. But if you have a very high functioning machine, you know, very strong processor in the computer, for example, everything's going to move very fast. And that is what we're hopefully moving towards as far as health is concerned. But what do we need to pay attention to? Because granted, the average home person is not, you know, they're not an iridologist. They don't have a background in sclerology. So if they go and they look in the mirror, what do they need to pay attention to in their eyes?
I say if you look at two things, which are really, really helpful, is you want to see it in your eyes. If you have a lot of blood vessels in your eyes and they're not white, then you want to see them as the blood vessel approaches the iris. It's usually a sign of worsening of the condition or the stress. So you want to see, if you want to see signs of improvement, and you want the blood vessel retreating back towards the eyelid itself, you know, or back away, reversing away from the iris, that's one good sign of progress. Another one is just an overall disappearance of blood vessels from the eye. Sometimes day-to-day you'll see tiny ones that will come and go, and the fewer of those, the better. And then, of course, the white. You know, you can look at white paint, and I don't think of sclera. I've seen one sclera in my life of a girl that had they live off the grid. They don't have electricity. They ate mostly raw foods. Her mother was a colonic therapist, so she had gone through a lot of colonics. And I saw this girl about age 15, and her eyes were so clear. I had seen her 4 years earlier, prior, so I knew her mother, and then I didn't recognize her. I was, wow. That's the only set of eyes I've ever seen that didn't have any blood vessels in them, and that was partially because this person's lifestyle. You know, they're not in the, like in my office, I've got 15 Wi-Fi signals going through my office. You know, just ridiculous amount of EMF stress.
Mm-hmm.
So looking out for ourselves, it's like the more blood vessels we see, especially in the top part of the eye, which is the brain and central nervous system, then that tells us, like, I really tell people, look at the tops of your eyes, and if you have already a lot of blood vessels there, then you really want to give yourself a lot of nerve support, and that's where nerve nutrients and herbs are. I have a particular penchant for that because of breaking my neck. I'm really into nerve regeneration and the nervous system, making sure it's supported with good fats and oils, too. That's something that...
And we've talked about that on some other shows, that the nervous system is so key in how our energy flows. That's where we can bring in some of the woo-woo stuff. It's really how we connect with divine spirit. So to have that going on where that nerve and that brain support area heavily loaded with the blood vessels, you definitely want to be careful. It's going to be harder for you to get those positive spaces normally, emotionally, mentally, and find that hope and connection with divine. And it's a good mm-hmm. time to say yourself some help, some nerve help.
Yeah, so then you contact someone like me. There are a lot of practitioners out there that, you know, they use, you know, you want to look for whole food supplements. You really, for the most part, want to stick with that because of there's a whole conversation we could have about left and right-headed molecules and stereoisomers. And, you know, when we buy synthetics or put drugs in our body, we end up with these wrong-handed molecules that they look the same, but a left-handed screw doesn't fit on a right-handed hole very well. And so it goes. They generate a lot of inflammation and congestion when you have the wrong-headed molecules. So most people don't know that, and that most of the supplements out there are made from chemicals, and they are chemical-like. Like, you buy your niacin, your average niacin in your health food store, it is more drug than it is food. It's far closer to drug. And I tell people such. It's like, you want to treat it for what it is, a drug, and you use it as such, but do not take it every day of your life for the rest of your life, because it's not what nature produced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we want our nutrients. That's why I wasn't even a fan of supplementation until 8 years ago when I ran across the Standard Process line, and then I started studying what a few companies were doing. It was like, okay, I can actually stand behind a few of these people because, for one, they've had the founder of Standard Process, for example, was a dentist who cured his mother of breast cancer by developing a supplement just out of his own genius. The guy developed a food dehydrator and a wheat grinder, and you're just an amazing genius, you know, you see out there. And where am I going with this? I hope that I can direct it back to something.
Well, I'm going to wrap you back around a little bit here because I've got a question in the chat area that
okay.
I have a wondering, what does it mean to have the blood vessels at the bottom of the eye?
So you can generalize quite easily. The bottom of the eye is the lower body, and you can't go much below the waist, so you can't get good leg diagnosis or arm diagnosis on the sclera. But what you're looking at in the bottom of the eye, primarily, especially the center, is the center of the pelvis, the bladder and the kidneys and the sex organs and all that. And then if you work towards the middle of the eye, at the bottom middle is where you're starting to see the spinal zone, and then the outer eyes where you look into the on the right eye, you'll be looking at the liver and the biliary systems, and in the left eye, you'll be looking at the spleen and the lymphatic systems. And so you can sort of go around the clock and you can find a way, but the lower body generally is the lower side of the body, the lower eye, and the left eye is typically the left side of the body, and the right eye is the right side of the body. So if you go lower left eye is lower left body. And then mid-eye is like chest on the outer quadrant, so it's like chest. And then inner mid-eye is like throat. So those are the four major zones as they were charted by Dr. Wheelwright, who is Jack Tipp's teacher. And this guy determined that actually Native Americans in the old Chinese medical tradition, they've been using sclerology, it turns out, for thousands of years. But the systems had been destroyed mostly, and the translations were gone, so he had to reinvent it, this guy, Dr. Wheelwright. And that's the chart as it was developed by him through trial and error over, like any good clinician, you know, scientist, probably over a 10-year period, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of cases. like any, I mean, I'm humbly would say I don't, God, I can't imagine undertaking a project like that. So,
yes.
We're, keep directing me back.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's, and this is the thing, and this is why the eyes are so important, you know, both between the iris and the sclerae, as you say, because it gives us this huge insight, and usually if we are having problems, say, down in our legs or something like that, it's not very often that it's actually in the leg, per se, as much as it's probably in spleen or bladder or kidney or something else, or, you know, that's affecting something maybe that's affecting circulation or these types of things. So it is something to pay attention to. Now, this type of thing, Craig, obviously you can't work with somebody over the internet, I'm thinking. They have to get in live to you.
Well,
you can
they have a good camera. I've had a few successful patients on the internet where they have a good camera. I have a series of photographs on the on my website about this is the kind of quality of photograph and what type of photograph we're looking for. So anyone with a digital camera can take the photographs and send them to me as attachments. It's very helpful to have this, but I don't require it because most people, just to get to the level of the protocols and the information with me, I think is enough work for a few months alone, and then you can get at other stuff later. Like I have a client in Ohio that I've never met personally, but we Skype and we talk and go over her lab work and sends me photographs of her tongue and eyes, and it works out quite well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to know.
It's better. It's better. I could have a human being in front of me, ideally. I have a great, great passion for sitting with people and connecting and sort of like that exploration of like, wow, what's this being going to present, you know, and what's the gift today? And it's quite rewarding.
Yeah, I agree. There's, you know, there are those two different dynamics, and I notice that even in my work where I'm not looking at the physical body, that even though I can work at a distance with people quite well, it's not the same as somebody being in my presence. And, you know, I'm seeing there's somebody in the chat room that I know has been to one of my live events, and they can probably attest for that. That, you know, they've listened to me on the radio, and then, you know, there's a big difference in being face-to-face and having that interaction there as well. And you do an interesting piece in your work as you're helping people, and you come in, and so somebody comes to you, and you look at these different things, and you're going to look at their eyes, and you're going to look at their tongue, and these sorts of things, and you determine, okay, we've got some congestion here and this running a little bit toxic and things like that, and then you start to set them up on a process. Is that what you do? You also, I know, work with the seasons to help people detoxify in the seasons and work nutritionally according to that, which is a huge part of my work, working with the seasons. I find that very important to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, a typical person walks in these days, I'm pretty much 100% referrals. Like, my business cruises along on referrals, and I'm setting up systems now, more efficient systems, just to get more business in. So, you know, having staff now and apprentices and things. So somebody walks in and right now the way the system is set up, they see me for anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour. And a typical initial visit is an hour to 2 hours. And then I collect my data, and we talk about what the first steps are. And so people come in different tiers. I have people right out of McDonaldland, for example, that want to get better, and they have cancer. And so they're the easy ones for me because it's like, well, your first step is just go buy organic. Instead of non-organic coffee, buy organic coffee. I have a woman that I'm working with right now on that front. So they're the easy ones. And so, but if they're coming in out of, like, farmer's market tier, then I'm going to give them a different project. I might say, you need to do 6 carrots a day for the next 4 days, and let's see what happens when you do that. I love trying stuff out like that. Like, let's give you 8 cloves of garlic for 3 days and see what that does. It gives me information, you know, like just give you clay for 5 days and see if that helps this situation. So they'll walk home with the project, and usually it's a number of things. And based on years of feedback from clients, it's like it usually is 2 or 3 months before they're up to speed for where I want them to be. So usually I give people time now. Usually I just throw the book at them and say, you need to do these 10 things, and we'll get them done as fast as we can. And now it's like less overwhelmed. Like we're talking about keeping it simple. It's like, okay, for the next 2 weeks you're going to be doing this, and I know your life's busy, so what you need to do then, you know, depending on how bad their situation is. Like, I got a new client with myasthenia gravis, and he walks in, and I didn't even know what it was. He's like, you ever heard of it? And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, can you help me? And, you know, look it up a bit. And I'm like, well, yeah. It's like, I don't treat diseases. I treat people. So I see what you got going on here, and you've been labeled, but it doesn't mean that's what you are. And, of course, I can help you. And then I research. It's like, oh, look at that. It's like, you don't even treat the muscles and the nerves. You end up looking at this other part of the body. And so what they get a few weeks later is I mold them over for an hour or two, and I send them a report of my findings, which basically says, this is what I see as your stressors. These are the root causes of your situation as I see them, in likelihood of probability, blah, blah, blah. Here's phase one as I see it, you know, first couple of steps, and then I might hold out and say phase two and phase three, I'm gonna keep in my records, and you can have them when you want. But, you know, a page or two is often enough just in that report of findings. It's like, here's what I see. Here's what, and if they want more information, I tell people, if you want to have like an hour of me just talking about your eyes, we can schedule an hour to go over that, but we spend a lot of time in these fascinating parts of my practice, but I realized years ago, it's like, we really need to get people steps, and here's what you need to do, and let's talk about and program in there what you need to do, and if you want to pay extra to talk about what we've presented to you in the report of findings, that's great, but it's like today, it's just like, it's like triage, I call it. It's like there's this health triage going on, and we don't have time to really talk about the minutiae of the iris and most clinical appointments these days. It's just like they trust me, and the people that do want to know, they just have the money to pay, you know, that's what I'm trying to say. And then there's usually follow-ups anywhere from, I have bodywork clients I've been seeing for 10, 15 years, and they're so, so happy because they get the nutrition part once in a while and bodywork, and then there are people that, I don't want anyone to graduate. What I really want is what Michael Dobbins, a great clinician that died here recently, said. He says, I don't want all your money. He says, I just want a little bit of your money for the rest of your life. And I think that that's a good motto because the service I provide is keeping people healthy so they don't get sick in the first place, which is what most people want ultimately. And I think that we're trying to keep people coming back that just sort of drop out. Like, oh, I'm done with Craig. I'm all better now. It's like, yes, but we're here because you're still going to be buying supplements. And you're wasting your money out there at the health food store. So we will help you use your money to get the real deal, which is, you know, raw food concentrates. So that's kind of what we're looking at, just long term, like, get your stuff somewhere. If it's not from us, then use us for education, because I'm really a big, big fan of putting in paradigms in us. That's a big part of my business, is changing the paradigm of how we perceive health and the eddy we're stuck in around the science, the religion of medicine, I'll call it. You know, people still worship their doctors as if they were like a priest or something. It's like, geez, really?
It's true. And as you say, I mean, I believe very strongly there's a time and a place for doctors and traditional medicine and things like that. But it's not for all the little people and things like that are going on out there. So, Craig, give us a little idea what you've got coming up as far as events, because I know you have some things, the events or courses that you do, and there's some that are great for this time of year, food intolerance things, summer small intestinal cleanse, blood sugar balancing. Give us a little insight what you want to share and how people can reach you. And
oh, thanks. That's good. So it's funny because I'm more concerned usually with just helping people, and that's why I have an assistant now to do with all this marketing stuff. So the website's almost finished. I'm being a little apologetic. The website's almost finished. We have a It's not so much a blood sugar cleanse, we'll call it a blood sugar regulation program, and it came in through the standard process people, they came up with it, and then I liked the idea so much that I just I take other people's ideas, like these great companies, and like, well, let's see if we can make this a little more customized instead of a big one-size-fits-all package. So what I like to do in any of my cleanses, so the Blood Sugar one, for example, is it's not an in-person one. I want to be able to try and reach a broader audience around the country, so it's going to be like a phone call, like a group phone call. And then people send in their intake forms, which go out, and it tells me the intake forms are organized by bodily system, so if there's a lot of symptoms showing up in one part of the form, then I know that we need to focus on this part of the body in their blood sugar cleanse, for example, because the pancreas helps out, the liver helps out, the adrenals help out with blood sugar, so does the brain, and indirectly so do the kidneys, so maintaining blood sugar balance. So if you look at one of those five organs and they're kind of out of balance from the intake form, then we say, okay, well, your blood sugar cleanse will be focused in this area, your supplementation will look like this, and basically it's a one price, and you pay $149, we tell you you can eat anything on this one page of food, this list of, simple again, right? What, doc, what can I eat? If it's not on that one page of food list there, you can't have it. Okay, simple. And so for 10 days you can have anything on this list and take the supplements, and then there's another phone call a week. So that's a week prior, there's a phone call to get everybody ready, then there's a phone call to launch it the day before, and then there's another one a week into the 10 days just to check in, see everybody's doing, if they need support. And usually include with stuff like that's a PowerPoint. My experience shows that most people, if they don't show up live for my presentations and they can go watch the YouTube and look at the PowerPoint later, very few do that. But I think the value in that is that just staying inspired by someone. So the blood sugar cleanse is sort of there to, because blood sugar is so important, I just found out something recently that it's a foundation for every system in our body. We have to have good glucose control, and we also have to have cells that make glucose from food. So we have to have a cell that makes glucose from carbohydrates or makes glucose from fat or can burn fat or protein, you know, and if we don't, then it's a very, very foundational level thing. So I tell people, like, you know, get your blood sugar right mechanisms cleaned out, and there's a certain set of symptoms that go along with that. So before and after, most people are doing a lot better. The small intestine cleanse is another sort of a phase two of that. As we talk about the summer season, the blood sugar cleanse is technically in the spring, but we're focusing a little more on the liver since it's the spring, since the liver is our dominant organ in Chinese medical tradition. But in the summer, the small intestine, the heart, or the fire element is dominant, and that's where, you know, for a lot of the country, it's going to be hot in the summer, and so we have cooling raw foods and juices, and so that's a 21-day cleanse, and it's also a one-price thing where we do have it in person. We have a number of visits, including a visit where everyone shows up, and I take their blood pressure lying down and standing up, and their temperature, and the photographs of their eyes and tongue before and after. And then that helps me determine, because if their blood pressure falls when they stand up, which is a whole other longer conversation about Ragland's test. In Ragland's test, if they have a falling blood pressure when they stand up, then versus when sitting down or lying down, then it means their adrenals are weak and they're probably exhausted. So there's an old saying in detox therapy that I liked was, a tired body won't detox. So if someone's tired, they're going to get a different cleanse than someone who has vitality and adrenal strength. You can accomplish the same thing as the Ragland's test by doing a saliva test that costs $200. But for example, it's like, well, I'd like to know my cortisol levels for sure, and my DHEA and all that. So if you want that, the science, then you spend $200. But if you'd rather just say, I want to know my adrenal health, well, we can do that for free by just a simple blood pressure check. And there's also other ways you can check the adrenals, which we won't go into now. So that's 21 days. And the other thing about that cleanse, which is nice, is for the people that want to take it easy, here's a one-page handout. It has all the foods you can eat for 21 days. Here's the PowerPoints. Here's the YouTubes. You can show up on these days for support if you want. There's a group chat room. There's there's places you can connect with everyone in the group and ask for support if you need it. So it's really about being in a group process, what I like to call a container. Like you and I have a little container here with some radio people, right? It's like an energetic container. And so the cleanse is a safe container for people to make change and feel supported, because that was the number one thing I saw in my I studied to be a cancer guide many years ago, and at Mind Body Medicine in New York. And the cancer guide thing was that interesting was that the people that do the best in overcoming cancer were the ones that had the most support. And so that's, I think the group support is really helpful, being supported and making changes and having support in our home, of course, too. So these are things that we emphasize. It's like, if you've got a spouse who's a jerk and you're trying to cleanse, you know, kick them out. know, or have a talk with them. Have a talk with them or something and get some empathy and some understanding and, you know, like your word there, get some compassion.
Yeah, get a little compassion going. And you're right, that support is absolutely huge. And I want to mention to our listeners that we've been talking to Craig Lane of Health Alchemy, and you can certainly research and look up more of his work at healthalchemy.com. And he's got various things on there like quizzes that you can take, and he's got his services and these cleanses we were just talking about. And you know, what's great about Craig is he's not there to just take your money. Matter of fact, he's going to focus on helping you find some of the least expensive ways to go about doing things and healing yourself and finding out what's going on with your body in there. And so if you've missed any part of this, we've been talking about the eyes and iridology and sclerology and bioengineered nanoparticles and add a few other things along the way and what Health Alchemy is about. So you can definitely go back and catch those in our archives. And Craig, I just really want to thank you so much for being with us tonight and sharing this wealth of information, because I've had people that do health and nutrition on before, but not people that delve into the level of work that you're doing and the types of things you're doing and the combination you're doing it.
Thank you. It's funny, I had a business coach years ago. He said that one of my fuels was acknowledgement. So thank you for acknowledging. It's really, my life has sort of become a giveaway. I felt like I got everything I needed sort of spiritually. I'd accomplished a mission a number of years ago, and then it was like, how am I going to remake myself? And so a statement by George Bernard Shaw kind of sums up my life these days. Is like, he says, I want to die used up. I don't want to keep all this stuff inside me. I want to share it and get it out there, because it's, I judge there's a lot of help we can do and get people to get to their health in ways that we may not have thought were so, possible. Oh, well, that's possible. It's not even that hard. So.
I think that's the thing, is people make it so much harder, and there's these ways that are just so much easier to go about it. And again, thank you, Craig, for coming on and sharing this wealth of information on activating compassion in the midnight hour.
You're welcome, Jesse. Hope you have a wonderful evening.
Yes, and you too, and have a great, great weekend. And I want to mention again, Craig's website is www.healthalchemy.com. And for those that don't have the advantage of seeing the show description with the link on it, that is HealthAlchemy. So it's spelled a little bit differently there. And go in and take a look at his work and see what he's doing. And he's got some great stuff there. Now, next week, I am going to have Adam Hall on the show. And some of you might remember Adam from last year with the Earth Keeper Alliance. And he's coming on, and he's got another new piece of his movement that's coming around, and it's called Conscious Capitalism. So, you know, he's all for people being able to have a fun and enjoyable life, but let's do it consciously, and let's find conscious ways to bring it about. So that's going to be a very interesting show coming up next week. And again, if you'd like to check out my work, you can do so on my website, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1.com. We actually have a tab there for all of our Main Street Universe shows and hosts, and you can check them out. And on my tab there, you're going to find out our message was from Yehuda Berg is going to be on there, and the archive shows are on there. On the main part of my website, you'll find my books. You'll find the monthly special. It's right there on the home page. And by the way, that special for the month of May is 25% off of the event that I have going on in June, and that event is called Feeling Air, Insights of Divine Truth. It's a weekend of harmonizing, and that's about harmonizing yourself, harmonizing with others, harmonizing with universal energy and doing universal healing work. We do meditations, things like that and that. 1 and 2 day options on that. So if you go in there and sign up for that event this month, and the event itself actually runs on the 21st and 22nd of June, you can receive 25% off. Just go onto my homepage, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1.com, and it'll have all the information on there for you with that. And I've also got other opportunities like affiliate opportunities that people can take advantage of, and videos that I put up every month, things like that that people can take advantage of as well that are on there. And again, I want to mention that we've got several shows here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights we have Darren Bouquer, who's a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans. He does a show called Spiritual Insights, so he talks a little bit about some spiritual things and then does some readings on the air. Monday nights we have Randy Goldberg, who does Vedic astrology. Tuesday nights we have Susan Weed, who shares her wisdom in herbs and natural plants. Wednesday nights we have our flagship show, which has Daniel, Janice, and Brett on there hosting it. Thursdays, Queen Mother Omaku, who looks at Egyptian culture. Fridays, Kevin Baird with his work Walking on the Sidewalk. He created his own oracle deck called Horizon Oracle Journeys deck, and you can learn more about that deck on his website at templeofgaia.com. And then, of course, Friday nights right here, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And this is Jessie Ann Nichols, George. I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. Again, thank you to all of our listeners, not only on Blog Talk Radio, but those that are streaming live on PEN, known as Prayer Encounters Network, StreamFinder, and TalkStream Live, as well as those catching our podcast at iTunes and TuneIn.com, and those that are catching the YouTube version of the show. So a special thanks to tonight's sponsor as well, Earth Goddess Rising. And again, if you'd like to find out more about their work, catch the archive from last week. Really interesting people they have participating in that event. And we're going to actually have a second one of those shows like we did last week, kind of a roundtable of presenters coming in about later on this month, I believe it is, towards the very end of this month. And I just want to say, you know, I look forward to seeing everybody back here next week as we delve more into Activating Compassion. Don't forget, if you've enjoyed the show this evening, share it with others. It's going to be available at this same link in our archives. And I'm going to leave you tonight with the song Yearning For, also known as Over and Over. It's by Shem Shai, great group that I met in the Sedona, Arizona area a little while back. And, you know, just thanks so much. I look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week.
The first Earth Goddess Rising Retreat is set for July 11, 12, and 13 of 2014 and will be held in stunning Pagosa Springs, Colorado. Come join us with other men and women from around the world for yoga, meditation, classes, organic meals, dance and music festivities, healing workshops, hot mineral springs, and more. Want more information? Visit earthgoddessrising.com and cash in on the early bird ticket sales, earthgoddessrising.com.
And if I could see what makes me blind, I would soar to the edge of my mind. And to touch what seems unreal, just to show you the way that I feel. And we are in time with time, one with season of change inside. And we are in tune with the tune, caught in a balance of sun and moon. Oh, deep inside, the light within, shining to show you it's here to begin. When all I have is all I need, I will soar to the edge of eternity. And we see it eye to eye,
Over and over, life is your lover, learning to walk just a little bit.